Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on compulsory education when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something's wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools or banned from our public institutions and our national consciousness. And now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and our moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers not only practiced, but they advocated the Ten Commandments. They put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution, and there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all of the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the benefits, 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the law and its penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which are the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can go to georgegordon.com or georgegordon.net. Just click on to our archives page when you get there, and you can download that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, and go to our archives page. All right, we've been talking about compulsory education. Where did the power come from that the state utilizes to compel you to educate your child in public school? You're probably pretty well familiar with or concerned about the fact that if you don't send your child to public school, social lady's going to come over and take your kid away from you. You're going to be prosecuted for truancy or something on that order. And that's all very true. And it's not just true here in the United States. Hell, it's that way in Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe, and Russia, and China, and every place else. But why is it that way? So in the last program, I made this observation. I said, you know, if I came up, knocked on your door, and told you that I want you to join with me in a contractual arrangement to give me the same powers that the state of New Jersey or Florida or France or Brazil exercises over you concerning your children, you would think I was crazy, nuts, a lunatic. And then I pointed out, well, you don't think that the state now is a lunatic, and they're total strangers. You don't know who your local social lady is. I pointed out to you that here in my county, I know who my social lady is. We've only got one. Now, if you live in New York City, you know there's thousands of social ladies, but, you know, they've got a beat. And your social lady, you know, that's assigned to your school over there, you know, you should know who your masters are. You should know who the school administrator is and who the superintendent of public instruction is and who the social lady is. These are the people that you've contracted with. Now, right away, you're going to say, what? I never contracted with these people. Oh, yeah, you did. You've got a signed contract with these people, and you don't even know where it's located or what the terms and conditions of the contract are. Now, do you? So in this last concluding program, we're going to take a look at that. Now, Dr. Everett Sullivan was a Baptist pastor, and he has gained renown as the Nebraska preacher who went to jail rather than to license his school. And in a recent talk to a Missouri congregation, here's what he had to say. Now, this was done in March of 1983. This is an old-timey Baptist preacher, and he was running a school up in Nebraska when he didn't have the state's certified teachers, and he didn't have a license. Okay, now let's take a look and learn a lesson here. Now, the pastor made this observation. He said, now, many people have asked me, how did they put you in jail? Now, let me say this, and it may shock you, but I was personally never charged with anything. And I've never been charged with breaking the law, and I've never been charged with committing a crime, and I've never had a trial. So you may ask again, well, how then did they put you in jail? Well, I may not know much about your church, and I may hit you here, but I'm finding that this is one of the things that I should be telling people about their churches. They sued the corporation. Now, I don't know if your church is incorporated or not, but if it is, then listen up. When a church incorporates, it becomes a creature of the state, and its officers become agents of the state. And the agents and the officers and the corporation have no constitutional rights. And by the way, if you take a license for anything, you lose your constitutional right for the thing that you took your license out for. So I'm going to pause right there. You got a marriage license. And when you got your marriage license, you waived all of your constitutional rights concerning marriage. Now, that's the way that game is played. And the reason I'm going to read this story to you is because this guy actually went through this. He experienced this. He didn't know. He was ignorant, just like you and everybody else. But when he got through and the state raped him, robbed him, and pillaged him, he wasn't ignorant anymore, and he wasn't innocent anymore. And he said, well, I'm going to go out and spill the beans. I'm going to tell everybody what these licenses are all about. All right, so you got a marriage license, and you gave up your rights, your constitutional rights, for the thing, marriage, that you took the license out for. That's the way that game is played. Now I'm going to give you a shocker. And I don't like to do these things because it makes me look so ridiculous. But you see, we've learned some things. For several years, we went down to the legislature and we said to the legislature, give us some relief. Now, I'm glad tonight that I can stand here before you and report that they didn't give us the relief that we were seeking. And I'm glad that they didn't give us that relief because the Constitution says that it's an area that they shouldn't be involved in the first place. But as we testified before the committee, the parents would testify and they would weep and they would say, these are our little children. God gave us these children and we're responsible for them, as they'd look back across the table at those senators. Now, Senator Pfeiffer, as a young man, or is a young man, about 38 years old, and he's an attorney and legislator on the Education Subcommittee. As these parents were testifying, Mr. Pfeiffer looked back across the table, and he said to this mother, who had just completed her testimony, do you have a state marriage license? And she said, yes, I do. And the senator then said, well, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege granted by the state, and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state? That's a question. Let me read that one to you again. This is a state senator, Senator Pfeiffer, asking a young mother if she had a marriage license, and she said yes. Well, of course I do. Everybody has a marriage license. So what I'm asking you is, but why? Do you know why you have a marriage license? You have a marriage license so that you can waive all of your constitutional rights as they apply to marriage. That's the purpose for a marriage license. And oftentimes women, especially women, insist upon having a marriage license. I suspect it's because women have been oppressed for thousands of years. Women have been subservient to men for thousands of years. And that because of that, they want to be subservient to the state because they have a subservient nature. But for you ladies out there, let me ask you, is that really in your best interests? I mean, I'm not sitting here telling you that you shouldn't have a marriage license. I'm just here to report that when you take the marriage license out, you give up your constitutional rights. Are you really sure that you want to waive your constitutional rights that relate to marriage? If you're sure that that's what you want to do, get after it. If you're not so sure, why don't you educate yourself first? Maybe your constitutional rights are more valuable than the marriage license. Have you ever thought of that? Now, here's what Pfeiffer said. He said, now, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege, it's not a right, it's a privilege, from the state, and that every child that's born, ladies, every child that you bear with this state marriage license becomes a ward of the state, subject to social lady, subject to teacher, subject to the school superintendent. They will tell you how to educate their child. Now, it's true, they will let you put braces on the kid's teeth, feed him, clothe him, house him, and pay all of the bills. But in the final analysis, when the question comes up as to how to educate him, they will make the determination as to how that child's going to be educated. Is that child going to be subjected to evolutionary philosophy? Yes. Sex education in school? Yes. Liberal philosophy? Yes. The Ten Commandments? Never. The Bible? Never. The laws of God? Never. Prayer in school? Never. Got that? Now, if that's satisfactory and that's what you want, we'll stick with the program. That's what you've got. Now, Senator Peter Hoagland was on a television show with me debating this issue of private and public schools, and what he said to me on that show was repeated by the head of the state PTA and by the executive director of the State School Board Association and by the executive director of the Teachers Union. Four people said the same thing. Now, we were on Channel 6, live at 5, and this lady looked over at me, the moderator, and she said, well, Pastor Sullivan, only 8 states in the union require licensed schools and certified teachers. It surely must not be that important of an issue. And I said, you're right. There is a way to solve the problem. National standardized testing. We had our students tested by the state's own experts. We're a year ahead of the public schools, 2.5 years ahead of the Omaha public schools. We were so good that the judge wouldn't even let us put it in the record. Now remember, this pastor now is running a church. This church has a grammar school, and they have unlicensed, uncertified teachers, but their educational curriculum puts them a year ahead of the Omaha public schools, puts them 2 years ahead of the standard schools, that is the public schools of the nation on average. So the state isn't complaining about their academic standards are excellent. The state is complaining about the fact that they don't have certified teachers, and that's what the law requires. Well, she looked over at Senator Hoagland, and she said, well, Senator, why is Nebraska making such a big deal out of this? Now listen up, because here's what Senator Peter Hoagland had to say. He said, the reason that we're making such a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate children in their doctrine, because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of the one-world socialist order, and their children will not fit in. Now, did you get that, kids? Let me read it to you again. It's a pretty important statement. This is Senator Peter Hoagland, 1983. And he said, the reason that we're making a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate children, their children, in their doctrine. And all of you people out there, listen up here. You people do not have a right to educate your children in your doctrines, whether they be religious or political. And the day will come when you want to teach your children political doctrines that the state doesn't approve. And when you do that, they're going to take your children away from you. Now, I don't know what administration is going to take that one on. Up to this moment in time here in the United States, they're still allowing Republican and Democratic dialogue concerning politics. Now, if you belong to some other political party, or you identify with the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party or something else, you are already automatically branded as a right-wing lunatic fringe. It's not against the law to be a lunatic right-wing fringe, not yet, but it will be. It will be as much against the law to teach libertarian political philosophy as it is to teach the Ten Commandments in a public school. And the day will come here in America when you will be jailed for doing that. So wake up and smell the coffee. That's what's coming. It just so happens that in Nebraska, you know, there were two senators here, Hoagland and Pfeiffer, who understood the law. Sullivan didn't, and this young mother didn't. And I'm just here to report to you that there isn't one person in 1,000 that understands this law. I have never had anybody call me on the telephone and say, well, I understand that my marriage license creates a three-party limited general partnership, and. Never, never, never has that happened. People call here and they complain about social lady and public schools and what's going on. I just ask two questions. I say, do you have a marriage license, and does the child have a birth certificate? The answer is always yes, always, without fail. And then I say, well, didn't you know that when you got that marriage license, it's a privilege granted by the state, and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state? And they all say, without exception, no, I didn't know that. And it can't be true, and I don't believe it, because that isn't what I learned when I went to PS 235. It hasn't occurred to very many people yet that going to PS 235 isn't the place to find out about the doctrine of parents patria, because they don't teach that there. All right, now let me give you a fundamental here. Get your pen and paper out here, and I'll show you something. It's called Wickard versus Filburn, and it's cited at 317 U.S. 111. You go to Find Law, and you plug in Wickard versus Filburn, 317 U.S., 111, you'll get the printed text. How many pages is it? That's not very many. 133 from what? Let's see what I got here. 113, 23, 33, 20 pages. Yep, 20 pages. So in 20 pages of text over here, I'm going to tell you what the answer is, but in case you wanted to know, well, where did Gordon get that kind of crazy lunatic information? I got it from the United States Supreme Court. And a lot of times you people from Australia say, well, does that work here? Yes, it works there. You Australians are a part of Anglo-Saxon administration. Did you know that your roots came from England? You Canadians, did you know your roots? Do you know where you people come from? I mean, there's so many of you foreigners that have come into these countries from all around the world that I guess, you know, when you come from Poland to Canada, you could say, well, does that work here? Yep, that works there in Canada, in England and Wales and Scotland and Ireland and France and Netherlands and Germany. All of you Israelites out there, South Africa. Hell, even you blacks in South Africa follow Anglo-Saxon administration. Did you know that? That's right. That's because we brought it to you. We knew that you people down there needed democracy, so we just brought it right along with us and indoctrinated all you blacks down there in South Africa and around the world for that matter. And all of you Indians over in India, you want to know, does this work in India? Well, as far as you practice Anglo-Saxon administration, it does. Now, here's a principle of law. Let's understand something here. I'm going to tell you a story. This guy, his name is Filburn. He's a farmer. He's in Indiana, 1938. This is in the Depression years, and the times are tough, just like they are right now. Times are tough. So the government comes in with its government program, just like they're doing today. Government programs over here. You know, we want to stimulate the economy. And they came up with a plan to boost the price of wheat, but to restrict the planting of wheat so that they could keep the price up. Instead of letting the price of wheat fall to its market level, they want to hold the price of wheat up. Now, the price of wheat in 1938 was 50 cents a bushel. And the government came along and said, we will pay you 98 cents a bushel, nearly double, not quite, but nearly double, if you will sign this contract with us and limit your production. Now, this guy, Filburn, can plant all the wheat he wants, 100 acres, 500 acres, 1,000 acres, and he can sell it in the marketplace for whatever he can get. A dollar a bushel, $10 a bushel, 50 cents a bushel, or 5 cents a bushel, whatever the market will bear. Now, the government comes along and says, if you'll sign this contract with us, we will pay you 98 cents a bushel. We will give you 48 cents a bushel more than the market price today. Sign the contract and agree with us that you'll follow our instructions. So Filburn goes in and says, well, how much wheat can I plant? And they ask him, well, how much wheat have you been planting? He said, 20 acres. They said, okay, well, then your allotment will be 20 acres. So he signed the contract with a 20-acre allotment. So in 1938, he planted 20 acres. And he sold the 20 acres of wheat, and he got 98 cents a bushel. And he said, wow, what a program. This is really great. I love it. I get twice as much money by selling all of my wheat to the government instead of selling it to ConAgra and ADM. Well, hell, you know, that's kind of a no-brainer. So 1939, he signed up again. 1940, he signed up again. 1941, he signed up again. Now, in 1941, Wickard changed his operation just a little bit. He planted his 20-acre allotment, but then he went out and planted another 20 acres for a total of 40 acres. Now, he's got a 20-acre allotment, but he's got 40 acres of wheat. Now, he takes 20 acres number one, he sells that to the government, and he gets his 98 cents. He takes patch number two, and he doesn't sell that to the government. He feeds it to his turkeys. See, in the meantime, he's taken on a bunch of turkeys now, and so now he's feeding this other wheat to his turkeys. Now, Wickard is the Secretary of Agriculture, and he gets wind of the fact that Wickard over here, who signed a contract back in 1938, 39, 40, and 41, and agreed to a 20-acre limitation on his wheat acreage, has planted 40 acres of wheat. And so they come in, and they find him, and they took his wheat allotment away, and they raised hell with him. And so Filburn, all-American that he is, says, wait a minute, hang on a second. It's true, I contracted with you for a 20-acre wheat allotment, and that's what I planted, and that's what I sold to you. What I do with the rest of my farm is my business. And if I want to grow wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil, that's my business, and that's what I'm doing. I'm an American, I'm free, I'm white, and I'm 21. And he went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and he said, listen, I've got a right to plant wherever the hell I want. I did not violate the law. I did not sell 40 acres at 98 cents a bushel. I took my other 20 acres, and I didn't sell it at all. I consumed it on my farm. I planted and consumed what I wanted to consume. And the Supreme Court came back and they ruled against Filburn in favor of the government, and they said, it is hardly lack of due process and equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. You got to write that down. It is hardly lack of due process and equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. Boys and girls, when you get a driver's license, marriage license, or business license, that's a contract with the state, just like Wickard signed. And the government comes in and regulates you under that business license, marriage license, driver's license, plumber's license, professional license, doctor's license, dentist's license, whatever profession you're involved in, whatever licensing scheme that you've signed up for. It is hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate, dictate, tell you what to do when you've signed up for it. And in every single case, boys and girls, you have constitutional rights concerning things like travel, marriage, business. And then government offers franchises and privileges. And if you want to participate in those privileges, whether it be selling wheat under contract to the government, or whether it be traveling in your automobile, or flying on an airplane, or, you know, the government regulates and subsidizes airports. The government builds those airports for the airliners to land on, and they furnish the traffic controllers up there. So when you come in and buy a ticket and you pay your federal tax, you know, you are joining in with the airline, which has a contract with the government. They're a corporation, and they've been chartered by government. And then here's this government charter, and you got a government airport, and then you walk in, and you want to buy a ticket on the government airline, which is regulated and controlled by the government, and then you complain when they say, bend over, spread your cheeks, we want to look up your anus, take your shoes off. Now, since the government has started these new practices of looking up your anus and taking your shoes off, I haven't been flying on airplanes. I used to fly on airplanes, and it was a privilege then, and it's a privilege now. It's just that today, the government is much more intrusive than they were 10 or 20 years ago. And because of that intrusiveness, I've decided not to contract with government, not to contract with United Airlines, to let them look up my anus. Nobody's been looking up my butt. Nobody's been taking off my shoes. And I haven't been taking my shoes off for anybody, but then I'm not flying on any government airplanes either. These are choices, boys and girls. Each and every one of us have choices to make in life. If you want your government to regulate and control your child's education, you cannot do a better job than a marriage license and a birth certificate. I mean, that's where the power comes from. And if that's what you want, get after it. I'm not here to tell you not to. But on the other hand, you know, if for some reason you think that you should educate your child and determine whether or not your child learns this or that or something else, or if you determine that I think that my wife and I should determine how we want to conduct our marriage and so on, those are constitutional rights. Now, you have constitutional rights until you give them away, until you surrender them. And nobody is coming to you with a gun at your head. Nobody is telling you that you have to have a bank account. Nobody's telling you that you have to have a driver's license. Nobody came up to you and knocked you over the head and said, if you don't have a marriage license, you know, we're going to do something bad to you. You volunteered for all of that. You wanted that. Just like Mr. Filburn wanted that extra 48 cents a bushel, and he was willing to sign a contract and limit himself, voluntarily limit himself to 20 acres. And he said, well, I'm going to grow 40 acres, but I won't sell it to the government. I'll feed it to my turkeys. The court said, if you had followed the terms of your contract and the intent of the law is to limit the production of wheat, the interest here of the government is to limit the production of wheat. We don't want 40 acres of wheat. So if you'd have planted 20 acres and sold it to the government for 98 cents a bushel, you could have come back into the marketplace and paid 98 cents a bushel or a buck and a half and then fed that to your turkeys. This idea that you can feed your own wheat to your own turkeys while you're under contract to the government is a fiction. And this idea, boys and girls, that you can have a contract with the government with a marriage license and a birth certificate and direct the education of your child is a fiction. You can't do that. Put that out of your minds. All right, now we're at the midway point, and I've got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or georgegordon.net, or georgegordon.com, either one of those, or all. And you can download that directly from our archives page, wherever you're listening to the program. On the Internet, you can download them. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans in their viewpoints, may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about compulsory education. What is it that compels you? It's called the police power. Well, then, how does the government use this police power against you? Well, we have laws that say, thou shalt do no murder. So when we take a look at the Mosaic Law, you'll find that in Anglo-Saxon administration, that theft is prohibited, and so the Congress and the legislatures enact laws against stealing. And it's against the law to kill people, and so government enacts laws that punishes people for killing people. Now, God came up with the law, and he said, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, adultery is a very popular pastime, at least here in the United States it is. Now, you people over in Saudi Arabia and Iran and Iraq and you Muslim people out there, you don't believe in and don't practice adultery. Here in the Western world, we practice adultery in opposition to and in violation of our God's law that says thou shalt not commit adultery. You're still practicing your God's law, thou shalt not commit adultery, but we decided that we would create our own God. You know, like the God of the United States, the God of Germany, or the God of Great Britain. Almost all Western Anglo-Saxon advanced industrialized nations have repudiated that law. Just to give you an illustrational flavor for what we're dealing with here. Now, just because we abrogate a law doesn't do away with the penalty. And so we here in the Western world, we have the natural penalty for practicing adultery. It's called venereal disease. And since we've begun teaching sex education in our public schools and we have told our young 14-year-old girls that they should be sexually open to young 14-year-old boys, that we now have a natural penalty for that. It's called fornication. It's not adultery, it's fornication. They're both unmarried, we presume. And as a result of that, we have 25% of our teenagers now infected with venereal diseases, you know, herpes. And they call them sexually transmitted diseases. That's just the natural penalty that we pay for the violation of that law. All right, now with that in mind, we have come up with some laws that have violated the law of our Creator, like education. We decided that we're going to educate our children in public school, that we don't want to educate our children in homeschool. So the state jumped right in there and said, well, hell, we'll furnish the school. And it fits right into the state's plan of controlling the people. I mean, either the people control the government or the government controls the people. I mean, that's the way the game is played. So here in America, from 1787 to about 1933, the people controlled their government. Starting in 1933 and until today, the government now controls the people. It's been that way for thousands of years. Government control over vast masses of people has been the rule. There have been a couple of three exceptions. Now, those exceptions have occurred in those periods of history when we decided to obey God and keep His commandments, because freedom, you know, we call it democracy, but freedom of action actually comes from our Creator by practicing the Ten Commandments. If you want to know where your natural, inalienable rights come from, they come from the Ten Commandments. That's where the beginning of it originated. Now, in a case called Hale versus Hinkle, and this is cited at 201 U.S. 43, that's 201 U.S., page 43, we get up to page 75 and we get into the meat of this argument. And this is a case that deals with the American Tobacco Company back in 1905 and their argument that they had a right. Now, this is a corporation. They said, well, we got a right, you know, the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, you know, to our Bill of Rights, you know, gives us rights. All right. So what we're going to talk about here is rights. Now, once you have a corporate charter, boys and girls, when you get a license, you create a corporate charter. That's what a license is. Now, you can have a trust. That's a corporate charter. You can have an LLC, that's a corporate charter. You can have a subchapter S, that's a corporate charter. You can have a straight corporation, that's a corporate charter. You can have a license, that's a corporate charter. You got that? All right. Now, there's different forms of these corporations. There's different ways for you to give power to your government. There's different methods and modalities by which we can surrender our power of attorney and a guardian ward relationship to somebody else. All right. Now, listen to this. Conceding that the witness was an officer of the corporation under investigation, and that he, the officer, was entitled to assert the rights of the corporation with respect to the production of its books and papers, we are of the opinion that there is a clear distinction in this particular between an individual and a corporation, and that the latter, the corporation, has no right to refuse to submit its books and papers for an examination at the suit of the state. All right, so now when you boys and girls get marriage licenses and professional licenses and so on, business licenses, then you join a corporate capacity in which you have no rights, only privileges, just like Mr. Filburn. He has a right to sell his wheat to the government for 98 cents a bushel, or whatever the government decides to pay. And then if they want to cut that back, they can. If they want to expand it, they can. But he's at their mercy as long as he's under the terms of the contract. So now let me throw a wild concept out there. Have you ever considered terminating these contracts that you have with the state? You can, you know. It's called rescission of contract. You can fulfill the contract or you can rescind it for fraud. There's modalities that are laid out for doing that. Look it up in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. It's called rescission. Rescission of contract. See, government, they revoke your license, but you rescind the license. Rescission versus revocation. Now, the individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen. The individual is entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. The individual power to contract is unlimited. The individual owes no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation, so far as it may tend to criminate him. The individual owes no such duty to the state, since he receives nothing therefrom beyond the protection of his life and property. You see, you want to underline that clause that says he receives nothing therefrom. Boys and girls, those of you that have marriage licenses, birth certificates, and business licenses, you're receiving privileges from the state, benefits. And it's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for the state to regulate Wickard versus Filburn. Remember that? So I'm not out here trying to teach you some wild new doctrine. I'm just here to tell you this is the way the game has always been played. Hell, this goes back thousands of years. This goes back to Moses at Mount Sinai. Your God told you plainly in Leviticus 18, verses 3 through 5, do not practice the laws of these foreign and alien gods. It's called idolatry. Don't practice the law of New Jersey. Don't practice the law of South Africa. Practice the law of God. Practice the Ten Commandments. Now, that was your marching orders. That's what you were told. And you woke up one day and said, no way, Jose, am I going to practice this damn law of the creator of the universe. Well, okay, that's fine. Well, now, if you're not going to practice the law of God, well, then there's only one other law left, and that's the law of your sovereign. So who is your sovereign? Well, most people would say, well, it's France, Germany, Belgium, Canada, Australia, New Jersey, California, as Arnold Schwarzenegger would say. Now remember, the individual owes no such duty to the state since he receives nothing therefrom. So boys and girls, if you're receiving something from the state, then you owe some duty to the state. So if you want to owe nothing to the state, you receive nothing. Can you say nothing? Well, let me ask you this. Do you know how much nothing is? Now, most of you people receive your citizenship. You receive benefits from the state, free public education, social security, unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, stocks and bonds. I mean, the list goes on and on. Under social security alone, there are 108 articulable benefits. 108. You're entitled to all of those benefits with your social security account. So all of you people with a social security account, just like Mr. Filburn, have an account, have a license granted by the state. And you owe a fiduciary obligation. 16.1% of everything you create and produce goes to the state to pay for those 108 benefits. Now let me show you the opposite to that. I don't pay any Social Security tax. I don't have a Social Security number. I don't participate in Social Security. I'm 70 years old and I don't draw any Social Security benefits. I'm not entitled to any Social Security benefits. I didn't pay into the program for the last 20 years. I rescinded my Social Security account number back in 1984. And I haven't done business with the government since. I don't have any checking accounts, credit cards, or business arrangements with the state or with the commercial banking industry. I'm not complaining about CDOs and foreclosures and the Federal Reserve and the Internal Revenue Service and the income tax. I'm not complaining about any of it. I don't participate in it. Now, conversely, I'm not entitled to any of the social welfare benefits or the social safety net. And if I'm unemployed and I can't feed my family, too bad Z's for me. I can't get unemployment insurance, workman's compensation. If I break my leg, I got to pay for it myself. If I get to be old, I can't get my Social Security check every month. I got to work every day. I'm 70 years old and I go to work every day. Why? Because I don't have any government benefits. Now, most of you people, you're age 70 or so, and you're retired. You quit working, and you've got the state supporting you. Well, okay. But you had to give up your constitutional rights in order to do that. And the state will tell you how much they're going to pay you. Now, notice that they just decided they're not going to give you your cost of living escalator. They're going to give you $250 in place of that. Well, don't bitch about it. Thank your benefactors. Don't complain. Thank them. Now, his rights, that is, the individual's rights, are such as existed by the law of the land, that's called the common law, the law of the land, long antecedent to the organization of the state and can only be taken from him by due process of law and in accordance with the Constitution. And among his rights are a refusal to incriminate himself and the immunity of himself and his property from arrest or seizure except under a warrant of the law. And he owes nothing to the public so long as he does not trespass upon their rights. Well, I don't practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. I practice strict property rights. I don't practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto anymore. I practice the 10 commandments now. It's a better program in my view. I wouldn't enforce that on anybody. Congress isn't enforcing that on anybody. But if you came to the conclusion that you wanted to do that, you certainly have a right to. But you got to terminate your contract. Just like Mr. Filburn, he had to terminate his contract with the Department of Agriculture if he wants to grow 40 or 80 or 160 acres of wheat. He's free to plant as much wheat as he wants. But not under the terms of a contract where he agreed to limit his production to 20 acres. Let me try this one. One time there was a subdivision called Bellwood Estates, and then they had what they called restricted covenants. And one day there was a guy down the street. He needed a new roof on his house, and so he put asphalt shingles on his house. And the neighbors complained and said, no, no, the restrictive covenants of Bellwood Estates says, thou shalt use shingles or shakes, wood, shingles or shakes. Every house in the subdivision had shingles or shakes, wood. You understand that? No asphalt shingles. Now, they cost a lot more. In those days, you could put a asphalt shingle roof on for about $5,000, and these wood shakes, you know, they cost about three times as much, $15,000. This guy wants to save $10,000, so he wants to put on asphalt shingles. Now, if you go driving down the street, almost all houses have asphalt shingles. Very rarely do you see one with wood roof. But, you know, this guy wanted to save $10,000, so he went ahead and spent the $5,000 and put on the asphalt shingles. The neighbors complained, sued him, took him into court, and the court came down and said, now, thou shalt put on wood shakes and cover up that ugly asphalt roof, which is brand new. And he did. And if he hadn't, they would have taken his house, thrown his ass out, and sold it on the courthouse steps. And he would have jumped up and down and said, but. All right, now let's wake up and smell a coffee here, kids. On the other hand, we have things called corporations. Now, a corporation is a creature of the state. It is presumed to be incorporated for the benefit of the public. When you got a marriage license and a birth certificate, you joined corporate capacity, and we presume that you joined corporate capacity for the benefit of the public. And what did Lord Redesdale say? He said, the state then comes in and has the power to educate your child or take your child away from you. Now, if you want the state to have that kind of power, you've got it. It's called the marriage license and birth certificate. Now, if you want to take that power away from the state, you can do that. You can do it in the future, but you can't do it with your past children. You see, children, wake up here. Let's understand something. When your child was born, lady, you were laying in the hospital, and the nurse came in with some papers and said, sign here, and you signed it. What the paper said is, the state of New Jersey would like to take your child. Wouldn't you like to give your child to the state? And you said, yes, yes, I want to give my child to the state. And you signed the papers. Do you remember that? All right. The state now owns that child. That's the end of the report. It's not your kid anymore. I get asked that question quite often. Well, can I rescind my birth certificates for my children and my marriage license and get my children back? And the answer is no, no, 1,000 times no. Can I terminate my membership in the Methodist Church and get all of my tithes back for the last 20 years? The answer is no, no, 1,000 times no. You gave the money to the church. It's gone forever. You passed your seed through the fire, lady. You gave your child to the state. That child is gone forever. Now, if you'd like to have another baby and keep it, you don't have to give your future babies to the state. You can keep them for yourself. If you have a mind to be that selfish and want to keep your own babies for yourself and raise them and educate them, you can do that. It's not very common, but it can be done. Now, a corporation receives certain special privileges and franchises and holds them subject to the laws of the state and the limitations of its charter. A corporation's powers are limited by law. A corporation can make no contract not authorized by its charter. A corporation's rights to act as a corporation are only preserved to it so long as it obeys the laws of its creator. There is a reserved right in the legislature to investigate its contracts and to find out whether the corporation has exceeded its powers. It would be a strange anomaly to hold that a state, having chartered a corporation to make use of certain franchises, could not, in the exercise of its sovereignty, inquire as to how these franchises had been employed and whether they had been abused, and demand the production of the corporate books and papers for that purpose. Got that? Now let's analyze that one for a minute. When you join corporate capacity, and you don't have to have a corporate charter, you don't have to go down to the Secretary of State and become a corporation. All you have to do is to act in a corporate capacity. So when you walk into the airport, you're acting in a corporate capacity. You're walking into a regulated enterprise. It's like walking onto a military base. You can do that. You know, if they'll let you in. I went into a military base. My brother-in-law was in the Air Force, and he invited me to come visit him, and he lived on the base. Now, when you want to go onto the military base, you don't just drive in there. They've got guards there. So you drive up, and the guard said, have you got a pass? He looks at your car windshield. You obviously don't have a pass. And so he says, do you have a pass? And you say, no. And he says, well, now, what's your business here? And I want to go visit my brother-in-law. He says, fine. And so he calls. He says, well, who is it you want to come visit? And so the brother-in-law said, yeah, that's my brother-in-law, George Gordon. And please let him onto the base so he can come visit me. And so they let me onto the base, and I came in to visit. What if the guard had said, no, you cannot come onto the base? It's a privilege to come onto a military base. It's a privilege to go into an airport. That's the bottom line. And when you do that, you act in a corporate capacity. So when I went onto the military base, I got to follow all the laws and rules and regulations of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I just volunteered. And I have a choice. I could tell my brother-in-law, well, you come visit me, and we'll have a meeting down here at Denny's. But if I want to go visit him on the military base, then I'm subject to the laws of the military base, and you're going to be subject to the laws of the airport and Homeland Security. And that's where life is. And I don't want to be subject to the laws of Homeland Security, so I stay the hell out of those airports. Boy, you're not going to catch me getting in there in that kind of corporate capacity. So now, if you want to fly on airplanes, well, then take off your shoes and bend over and pull your pants down and let somebody look at your anus and see if you got explosives up there. That's what you're volunteering for. And when you get a marriage license, boys and girls, you're volunteering for social lady and school superintendent and teacher to direct your child's education and to direct your child's development and to direct your life. Hey, I'm out of time again. I'm going to have to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. It says our time's up. We'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.